A massive piece of private sector infrastructure is opening in China today. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. First, markets after the Federal Reserve left U.S. interest rates alone after its meeting yesterday, but had cautionary words about the U.S. economy next year. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures reached down in the 0.3% range today. It wasn't much of a surprise that the Fed left rates alone, but it was to many that the Bank of Japan opted not to lower its rates today, and the key stock index in Japan, the Nikkei, fell 3%. London's FTSE is down 0.5%, with voters deciding 1 week from today on whether the UK leaves the European Union. The Walt Disney Corporation today opened its first park in more than a decade. It's in Shanghai. With a price tag of $5.5 billion, it's Disney's biggest and most expensive park. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz looked into whether it's big enough for China's growing consumer class.
You could take the subway to Shanghai's new Disneyland Park. It takes an hour and a half from downtown.
We are now at the terminal station, Disney Resort.
Or you could do what Yang Meng and Dong Yixian did, drive hundreds of miles from rural Shanxi province in a cross-country pilgrimage to Mickey and Friends.
It was totally worth it. We were at the park from 8 in the morning to 10 at night. When we first entered, we couldn't stop staring at everything. It's very well done.
The two scored tickets for the park's soft opening from a friend of a friend who works at the park. Standing outside the park's gates, Yang lugs a shopping bag filled with Mickey Mouse teacups and plates, while Dong cradles a stuffed blue Disney character, Stitch, from the movie Lilo and Stitch, that's the size of a baby panda. This, says Jim McGregor, author of 1 Billion Customers, is a sign that Disney in China is long overdue.
You got to look at the economy of a place and say, are there enough people that have enough money to spend this much to come and do this? And China is well beyond that now. I think it's going to really be a home run.
While profits at Disney's parks in the U.S. have surged by 50% over the past 5 years, revenue at its resorts in Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Paris has been flat. That's why investors are hoping the company's $5.5 billion resort in Shanghai will attract the world's fastest-growing consumer class, people like Maui Jun, who flew in from Beijing. After visiting, though, she says she's through with Shanghai's Disneyland.
The lines are too long. I stood in line for 4 hours for one ride. I've been to Disney's parks in America, so I'm okay with standing in line, but waiting more than 2 hours isn't worth it. But many Chinese have never traveled abroad, so they'll probably enjoy it no matter how long they wait in line.
After all, says Mao, that's life in China. You stand in line at the market, at the train station, for a subway. If you're going to waste your time waiting, you might as well be doing it at the happiest place on earth. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
But the headlines Disney had hoped for on this opening day in China have been marred by the news from Florida, where the body of a 2-year-old has been found after an alligator attack at a Disney resort there. It's been an unusually fine season for the Chicago Cubs. You probably did not know that that ball club, during the era of futility, was subject to a lawsuit defining how corporations in America are governed. As part of our series this week, The Price of Profits, Marketplace's Scott Tong looks at the Cubs and who has the power to make big strategic decisions, shareholders or the corporate brass.
Ernie Banks grounded out his first time. Banks hitting .263.
In 1966, 20-something lawyer Bill Schlensky got sick of seeing his Chicago Cubs lose. So he sued, since he owned a few shares of the team.
My father gave them to me as a gift.
We caught up to him in retirement in Texas.
It must have been before I was 4 or 5 years old.
The Cubs had gone 58 years without a World Series title. Perhaps it was a curse, or a bad manager, or a bad business model.
Hey! All two, strike two. And
Schlensky argued the Cubs didn't make enough money because they played in the day when people were working. Wrigley Field then was the only big league ballpark that didn't have lights. So he sued the ball club directors.
The directors have a responsibility for producing the most income for the shareholders.
Before the court, Schlensky argued that Cubs players struggled to adapt to the night games on the road.
When the Cubs had a homestand of more than 10 games, all-day games. The first game they played on the road, they generally lost.
The main defendant, team owner Philip Wrigley. His side may be best represented by this limerick, by Valparaiso law professor and part-time poet Jeremy Tellman.
As Wrigley explained to the court, pro ball is a daytime sport. Next, they'll sell whiskey down at Comiskey, where the team's out for profit cavort.
The owner won. Tellman says this ruling underscores a key principle called the business judgment rule.
Courts, for the most part, defer to the decisions of the board of directors and dismiss actions by shareholders.
He says company directors enjoy broad protection, at least against little shareholders like you and me.
Institutional shareholders have more options. They can just threaten to sell their shares, and that can bring management to the table.
In the end, the Cubs got their lights in 1988 after threats by TV broadcasters, among others.
Let there be!
Vindicating plaintiff Bill Schlensky and Professor Tellman. See, he's from Chicago, too.
If the Cubs win the World Series this year, which they almost certainly will, we should all drink a toast to Mr. Schlensky. The Cubs wouldn't have been viable economically if they didn't start playing night games.
FYI, the Cubs next play tomorrow at home. Day game. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And you know when you put money on a Starbucks card? Question of the day, where does that money go? Well, Starbucks holds it. A new analysis by the Wall Street Journal finds that Starbucks has more money on deposit than many banks, $1.2 billion on the cards in the Starbucks mobile app in the first quarter of this year. No, you do not get interest. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.